Need a reason to smile? Comfort Dental has you covered with new patient exams, including x-rays, for just $19. That's right, only $19 to get started on a healthier, brighter smile. With convenient locations, flexible hours, including evenings and Saturdays, and a team that truly cares, Comfort Dental makes dental care easy and affordable. No gimmicks, no stress, just quality care when you need it. Get comfortable with Comfort Dental. Call or visit ComfortDental.com today.
The weather in Central Ohio just got better, so why shouldn't your loan rate? CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.99% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org.
Terms apply. Minimum floor rates, 4.99% APR cars, 6.50% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello and welcome to the latest Grazia Life Advice episode. It's lovely to have you with us. I'm Rhiannon, and as always, we are getting six life tips from one brilliant guest. This time, it's an amazing comedian who's been on our screens for the best part of 20 years.
Hi, it's Mel Gedroych here, welcoming you to the... Actually, no, I'm not welcoming you. I'm not the host. Bloody hell, I'm so smug.
Mel Gedroych, one half of Mel and Sue, is probably most famous for bringing us the first seven series of The Great British Bake Off. Now, though, she's just released her first novel. It's called The Best Things, and it's packed with heart and humour.
With, hopefully... some laughs. I say that really advisedly.
There are some laughs.
Yeah, but you never know though, Rhiannon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You come to the end of it and you think, is any of that any good at all?
Yeah.
Are there any gags in there? Quite possibly not.
Without giving too much away, it's about a woman and a family who overnight lose all their money and their home. It is at least in part inspired by Mel's own life.
Yes, it stemmed from a personal truth. It was something that I had a brush with. We lost a house and rented a very tiny little, we called it the 70s love nest.
We also talk in this chat about what Mel is looking forward to as we come out of lockdown, not least a return to business as usual for comedians at the Edinburgh Festival.
All the performers, writers, you know, theatricals who've been sort of repressed for the last year and a bit, there's going to be a massive wave, I think, which is exciting. And musicians, yeah.
Mel was honestly a delight to speak to. So let's get into the chat. Hi, Mel. How are you?
Rhiannon, I am extremely well. It's very, very lovely to be on your podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy to have you on. And where are you? Where are you talking from? I'm in my bedroom. Lovely. I thought you might be.
Girlfriend, let's have a pillow fight. I have become too used to my bedroom. Being in normal clothes now, like stuff with a waistband, trousers with a waistband, or shirts with a collar, which has to happen very, very occasionally, is just the weirdest feeling.
Yeah.
Mm. I've got this brilliant Sesame Street onesie. That is kind of worn down in various parts now because it's just been used solidly since March.
Yeah, that it's sounds kind of, incredible.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's good.
You're here because you're going to be a brilliant guest, but also to talk about the fact that you have a novel out, your first ever novel. It's called The Best Things. And yes. Well, it's about a woman called Sally Parker, but why don't you tell us kind of what the plot of the novel is?
So... probably you might have met a Sally Parker. You might even have a Sally Parker in your life. I don't know. But she is the woman who seems to have everything. Mm. She's got the kind of the fancy lifestyle. She's got the hedge fund manager husband earning kajillions. She's got perfectly seeming children. She's got it all. She's the woman with sort of patent beige high heel shoes.
Yeah.
A little bit like Kate Middleton in the wardrobe. There's a lot of biscuit colored clothes in the wardrobe. Yeah. That sort of woman. They live in Surrey. They are living the life on a kind of supersized scale, basically. Mm. And basically, in a nutshell, they lose it all. They lose absolutely every penny that they ever possessed. And it's about Sally Parker actually re-emerging, finding her voice, finding her strength. You know, she's the kind of woman, the trophy wife, that's put her life on pause. She's pressed the pause button on herself, the snooze button, and she's become this sort of really quite sad, very passive figure. And it's her story, really. It's how she emerges. I won't tell you what happens. I'm not going to say anything, but it's a big old redemptive family tale with hopefully some laughs. I say that really advisedly.
Because, there are some laughs.
Yeah, but you never know though, Rhiannon. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You sit there in the local library, as I did for the winter of 2019, kind of chuckling to yourself quite a lot, feeling quite pleased with yourself.
Yeah.
And then you come to the end of it and you think, is any of that any good at all?
Yeah.
Are there any gags in there? Quite possibly not. So I really enjoyed writing it though. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. I say so far as if I'm not going to like the rest of it, but yes. I just, terrible thing to say.
I've read 23 pages. I won't go any further. Thanks, Rhiannon. Really supportive.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I just wanted to ask you, I don't want to insult you, but I don't think Sally Parkers wear Sesame Street onesies. So where did this story, you can do anything for your debut novel. So why this story and why did you end up on that?
So I think good stories, not always, but often tend to come from some sort of a truth. I think they have to, don't they, really? Mm. It's got to come from a place which means something to you, I suppose. I didn't go through the same experience as Sally Parker remotely, but we did have, let's say, quite a large financial hiccup in our lives about 15 years ago. And it turned everything upside down. And that really stayed with me. I knew I wanted to write something about a family that has to kind of strip away all their attachments to material goods and say, right, what really is the most important thing in life? Mm. Is it your house that you've just lost, or is it actually your family?
Yeah.
It's probably your house. No, it's not. Not at all. So yes, it stemmed from a personal truth. It was something that I had a brush with. But I must say as well, I'm very lucky. I have a very supportive family, as my husband does as well. And we would never have been left homeless, of course, but we lost a house and rented a very tiny little, we called it the 70s love nest. This kind of amazing corduroy velvet, funny little flat, the four of us, really tiny, had to put all our stuff into kind of, well, actually we sold a lot of it, to be honest, because we just thought this stuff's all absolutely useless anyway. We don't need this stuff. And we were there for 2 years and sort of built our lives back and were never happier. It was weird. Mm. It was weird. It was a sort of, yeah, interesting time. I mean, I wouldn't advise it. It's very stressful at times, but it kind of brought home a lot of truth. And I hope that is something that you'll find in my novel, The Best Things. And comedy. There's always comedy.
Yeah.
You have to laugh at the awful things that happen to you. You just have to, otherwise you can't get through, I think. Mm. I think it's really important.
Yeah. Well, look, we haven't even got into your best piece of advice and you've already given us several. So let's start off. And your first piece of advice, I love this. Tell us what it is.
So I think with the kind of digital era that we're all living in, I don't do a lot of social media. I'm going to try and do some Instagram at some point. Haven't quite got around to it yet. I know that's the wrong terminology. My children laugh because I say, let's get on the WhatsApp. And they go, Mum, it's not the WhatsApp.
Yeah.
You're just on WhatsApp. Anyway, I know I've got the wrong language with this, but anyway, I'll crash on. Mm. Yes, in this kind of crazy, disposable digital age where people are just pumping out stuff endlessly, I think good old-fashioned letter writing and card writing, postcards, I'm sounding like a nana, I know,
I
say this, but the joy of getting a blooming card through the post. I noticed actually last Christmas, so Christmas 2020, after that very difficult year that we'd all had, we got loads of Christmas cards at Christmas. I don't know if you did. And I found I sent a lot more because I really wanted that kind of tangible contact with people, I think. There's something about pen on paper.
Yeah.
And I think, and I say this to my kids, they get really bored, but I say, look, send thank you cards. It goes a long, long way. People remember it, you know. Oh, yeah. I'm a bit middle-aged. Sorry.
No, I think it's amazing. You know, someone else who gave the similar piece of advice on this show was Emma Barnett.
Oh, I love Emma. I love her. She's so cool.
Same. And she says, you know, it's a big thing of hers. And also that she talked about how important it was for her to receive them as well. And I think it's such a nice thing, isn't it? It's like knowing someone's gone to that extra bit of effort.
Definitely. But also in quite a sort of, in a slightly cunning way, if you receive a thank you card from somebody for something that you've done, it's going to make you much more likely to do something else for them.
Yeah.
So young'uns listening, come on. Get your courtesy skills. It really helps. It does. It really does.
Yeah. I always think to those times the week after Christmas, having to sit down and writing thank you very much for my books and everything. But, you know, that is important. And when you have your own children again, you start to press that on them, don't you?
Absolutely. And I'm sorry, a text or an email just doesn't cut it for me.
No.
It doesn't.
No. They're off the list.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Please tell me your second piece of advice, because I love this.
Oh, do you know what? This came about, I think all of us in the last sort of year, 18 months, have been doing things like sorting out our photo albums. Yeah. Well, if you're me, you have been. I don't know if you're the same, Rhiannon, but I've been doing a lot of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I came across some photos from the late 80s where a group of us from university had taken a show up to Edinburgh to the festival. And in my memory, I really thought I was very, very cool in 1989. Honestly, I've got this real vision of myself of just being kind of at my best.
Mm.
The wardrobe was cutting edge. It was a bit rock and roll. It was a little bit out there. It was a bit left field. The hairdo was excellent.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, found a load of photos from this particular site. Particular summer of 89, and in every blooming photo I was in a pair of white leggings.
I can't believe it.
Well, under a sort of quite cool, I have to say, I think I'd nicked it off my sister, this sort of prom dress,
right.
A short prom dress with braces on the top.
Wow.
Okay, white leggings, and then a pair of purple brothel creepers, which, come on, they're perennially cool.
Yeah.
And I just looked at these photos and it was as if my entire past just came crumbling down.
Yeah, it was all a lie.
Oh my days. I think the only people that can wear white leggings seriously are people like Kate Moss.
Mm-hmm.
You see them in Fellini films. Mm-hmm. You know, those incredible black and white, gorgeous, glorious divas like Anouk Aimée. Sophia Loren could possibly wear white leggings. She wouldn't, but she might look good in them. But I just think there are very, very few people that can get away with them. Every photo, Rhiannon, every photo from Edinburgh Festival 89, wow. I'm in these chuffing leggings and they look awful. They do nothing for my calves.
So do you think you had one pair or more? Were you wearing the same pair of leggings every day?
Quite possibly one pair. let's not go there. Edinburgh Festival hygiene is not of the, you know,
it's
not of the utmost importance. There's theatrical craft to be pursuing up there, Rhiannon. We don't think about simple things like laundry.
Sure.
Oh, dearie me.
Yeah. Do you still go to the Edinburgh Festival? Do you still love trying to get involved with the comedy scene?
I do, actually. Mm. And I'm really happy to say that my youngest daughter, Vita, she keeps her cards very close to her chest.
Okay.
But she's got very good, don't tell her I said this. She's got very good comic timing.
Right.
And I'm not going to be the pushy mum that's saying, oh, go to lots of comedy workshops and da 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 da, because that will totally put her off. But we do things together, like go to the Edinburgh Festival, and we have such a laugh.
Yeah.
It's just so fun. The last time we went, we just did 2 days. We saw 15 shows, I think.
Wow.
And actually, she's really plugged into all the kind of latest comedy and tells me about it. She took me to this show called, they're a group called the Police Cops. And I tell you what, they are the future. They are hilarious.
Yeah,
they're so brilliant.
I'm going to check those out because,
they're hilarious.
we really obviously missed it last year. And I just want, you know, when everyone gets back to life, I think it'll be, everyone will be running up there, won't they?
I think so. Oh, we need to, we just need tons of stuff like that. I mean, it's going to be quite overwhelming because, of course, all the performers, writers, you know, theatricals who've been sort of repressed for the last year and a bit. There's going to be a massive wave, I think, which is exciting. And musicians and, it's going to be an exciting time, I hope. I really do.
Yeah, I hope so. Some roaring 20s, hopefully. Can I ask, you said your daughter is funny and kind of has that timing. Mm. Were you always told you were funny? Was that something from when you were little, from when you were younger? Were you always into comedy?
Well, I was the youngest of four and quite a lively family, I'm not going to lie. Big characters, a lot of gags, a lot of bants. So I had to do something to get their attention. And I'm afraid I found my little niche. I mean, my family tease me mercilessly and vice versa. We're not a kind of family. I mean, we support each other, but there's a lot of teasing that goes on. And I think that's very, very important. And I have to say, we are like that with our children, I think. But I've always, in answer to your question, I've always absolutely loved comedy.
Just funny in your bones, that kind of person. Some people are, I think.
That's very sweet of you to say that. I don't know if that's true, but it's kind of all that I can do. Yeah. So I'm going to stick with whatever that is.
No, don't forget you're a novelist now too.
So. Oh, darling, I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm a novelist. Well, I mean, who knows? I've got another one on the brew.
Exciting.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely the way forward. When you're writing something like that, you sort of have total control over it. It's not like making a telly show where you're constrained by budgets or you've got 1,000 people just saying, nah, that'll never work. Sorry. Next. Mm. If you're writing a novel, if you're lucky to be given the opportunity to write a novel, you've got total control, man. You can take your characters wherever, whenever. You can lavish the money on them.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great phrase.
We'll see.
Your third piece of advice is that failure is as important as success. I feel like that's something we're coming to learn as a society, but we're not quite there yet. I mean, how did you come to this?
I suppose I sort of, Sue and I, my comedy partner Sue and I, my greatest friend in the world. So we've known each other since 1988. Which is 32 ruddy years. I can't quite believe it. We have been through so many failures, the pair of us, either as individuals or mainly together.
Yeah.
And they are always the times and the events and the things that you just remember and you laugh about. I mean, that's the great thing about being in a double act is that because you've got each other, you can usually, there are times when you can't, but usually there's a lot of laughter in the fact that you're in this appalling situation, you're going down the pan, you're crashing massively down the U-bend. I mean, I can't tell you, we talked about Edinburgh Festival. We did 8 Edinburgh Festivals, I think, together, Sue and I. And okay, one of them probably was quite good for us, maybe 2. Oh, there are a lot that were really, really, real, real shockers. Shockers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all fail, don't we? Mm-hmm. All the time. And I think it's good to recognize that and really try and see the good side. Maybe not at the time. I think you have to give it a few months before you can say, oh, yeah, right, okay, that was bad.
Yeah.
But then that good thing happened, or something weirdly good happened out of that failure. I think that often happens, but you don't see it at the time.
Sometimes it's just still standing, isn't it? The fact that you're still standing, and it's about building resilience too.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always thought, having been performing for a long, long time now, I mean, scarily, you know, decades, I sort of think, well, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. You just got to kind of embed your feet like little anchors. And just say, no, that may have been bad. This may be, you know, tricky times, but I'm not going anywhere.
No.
This is what I do. This is all I can do.
Yeah. I love that. We'll be back with more from Mel after this. We're still here.
The weather in Central Ohio just got better, and so should your loan rate. CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.9% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org. Terms apply. Minimum floor rates 4.99% APR car, 6.5% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
Melt fantastically, and I'd love you to tell us your fourth piece of advice.
Oh, lovely to be here. Lovely to be here, Rhiannon. So my fourth piece of advice is to do with working life, to do with getting jobs and stuff. And I kind of think I've done some really quite menial, boring, sucky jobs in my life. I'm sure we all have. You know, when you're starting out, I think you've got to be humble. And I don't mean that in the sense of just being weak and I'm going to lie over, you know, and I'm going to roll over like a Labrador and just go, oh, treat me really badly. I don't mean that at all. But what I'm saying is, if you're doing a job that bores you, that you find just, oh, relentless and awful, I think you've got to try and give it 100%. I do. I think everything you tackle in life has got to be done with 100%. I don't mean to be glib about this and kind of say, oh, you know, I had a job for 3 weeks and it was really tough, but I got through it. I just mean, if you can tackle something with enthusiasm and a little dash of optimism, it can really help. Because we've all been in that situation in life, haven't we? Where we've been thinking, this is awful, this is dead end, this is terrible. I suppose what I'm saying is I try and be optimistic about things.
Yeah.
Because I think there's always a little chink of light and hope.
Absolutely. And I think your attitude to something and whatever you're doing will always affect the way you feel about it. I mean, I'm sure you could walk into the greatest job in the world in a bad mood and have a bad day, right?
Yeah. Yes, no, absolutely. Also, rubbish jobs always bring later on the best anecdotes. They just do.
Yeah.
When you get to my grand old age of 52 and you're sitting around with your mates, what do you talk about? You talk about the times where you've been in the doo-doo. Mm-hmm. You just do. So if you're in that situation, you know, at the moment where you're in a job that you just don't like, or you can't get a job, you know, I mean, I've been in that situation loads. Have faith and have a little bit of optimism. Please, things will get better.
So I am very keen to hear about your fifth piece of advice, because this is something I have never, ever been able to master. Tell us your fifth piece of advice.
It's frightening. It is frightening. The piece of advice is, I'm calling it kill with kindness. So if there is somebody out there, we all know these people. Oh, yeah, we know them. These people that want to bring you down, that are being confrontational with you, that are being brutally horrible to you, that are trying to belittle you, demean you. God, this is sounding like a speech. I'm going to have to take this on the road, Rhiannon. Yeah. I'm going to have to get a little Edinburgh slot.
Yeah.
But if you're in that situation where you're just being confronted by somebody that is awful, don't rise to it. What you do is you plaster on a wreath of smiles around your face. And I mean, it is hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah, it takes practice. Yeah. And you literally just treat them with extreme kindness, with the smile never falling. I think the first time I did this, my sister and I were in a pub. This really horrid woman sat in our seats. We've gone, I know this sounds pathetic. This is a first world problem. We'd gone up to the bar to get a drink, got back, and she and her horrid friend had sat in our seats. And I said, I'm really sorry. I think we were sitting there, got a bag there or something. And she was so deeply unpleasant. And I could see my sister next to me. She's much more of a like, right, somebody confronts you, bring them down, take them down. And I just kind of put a slightly sinister hand on her shoulder and I killed this woman with kindness. And her face, she was like a sort of guppy fish. The kind of the jaw fell and she was just totally didn't know what to do with herself. And my sister said it was chilling. She described it as absolutely chilling. I was so delightful and pleasant and kind to her. She said it was chilling.
Did you get the seats? You got the seats back?
No, we didn't.
Oh. But it went down better.
We didn't. Yeah. But there have been many times when actually it's worked in my favour. Seriously. Honestly, just try it, Rhiannon. Try it. You have to keep very, very calm and just grab that moral high ground, literally.
Yeah.
Run up the stairs onto the moral high ground and grab it. Lie down and just kind of flat face yourself onto the moral high ground. It's brilliant.
I'm going to try it because you just never feel good after you've exploded, do you? Yeah. At the time, maybe.
No, you look rubbish. Mm. You feel rubbish. Mm. You feel empty. You've wasted good adrenaline that you could have used on something else, and it's just appalling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got much of a temper? Do you have to control yourself sometimes? Or?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's a family trait. I think we can all have quite short fuses. I really try to control it with the kids. I mean, it was really put to the test last year.
Yeah.
I mean, massively, and the beginning of this year. But you just have to. There's no point. There's no point.
No. Have you been in homeschooling hell like the rest of the world?
Thank the Lordy, Rhiannon. My kids are now 17 and 18.
Wow, okay.
So my elder daughter, Floss, is doing an art foundation. So we've now got art school in the garden shed. She's completely taken over the garden shed.
Wow.
And the other daughter, my younger Vita, is doing A-levels. She's LSEC.
Okay.
So she's doing drama A-level and a couple of others. And you go past her room and there's just sort of... And you just think, right, she's on drama. Good, right. She's doing drama. So, yeah, it's fun and games. Fun and games.
Yeah, I think still hard for everybody, though, no matter what age the children are at, to all be under the same roof and having to deal with all those pressures. Yeah.
Yeah, my neighbour's got, like, tiny children and they're of school age. And, I mean, I just... take my hat off to her, and indeed to all parents across the country who over the last months have been doing it. A full respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now you're a novelist. Everyone's going to be asking you, how do you write a novel?
My darling. Let me just take up my quill and throw my pashmina around myself as I try to answer this very taxing question. Well, listen, I think everyone does it their own way. I'm obsessed with people like J.K. Rowling who talk about, you know, sitting on a train and writing half a chapter on the back of a fag packet or whatever. I just think that's amazing. Sitting, you know, in a cafe with their toddlers and writing on a napkin. I just, I'm not that sort of writer, I don't think. When I was writing The Best Things, which I did in the winter of 2019, I went to the local library every day. I'm obsessed with my local library. I'm desperate for it to open again. I just love my local library so much. I mean, who knew? Who knew? I used to get there 5 to 9 without fail every weekday so that I could be the first person into the local library so that I could get the chair that I wanted in the local library.
Wow.
But it's brilliant being in the local library and writing because it just... focuses you. You can't resort to the kettle, the dog, the washing, the cooking. You can't resort to any of that. It's like every day is this kind of cleansed space. And you've just gotta, there's nothing else to do. I mean, you can read, obviously. Actually, that's true. You've got to plant yourself in a really boring section. I think I might have been, and I don't want to diss archaeologists, but I was in the archaeology section with quite a few dusty books. So I just thought, brilliant. I'm not going to be, you know, distracting myself with these.
Yeah, I think that's such a good piece of advice. Use your local library. I mean, how did you come to it? You must have felt like you could have a go at trying, you know, typing in bed or on the couch.
Oh, no, I can't. I don't know. There's something, I think it's because it doesn't feel like work. And I am a bit of a Puritan, actually. I like to feel like I'm working. Not to say that I'm going to be masochistic about it and sort of, I can only work in 2 degrees, you know, with a candle and fingerless gloves. I'm not like that, but I need to feel that I'm in a kind of work frame of mind, I guess. And much as I love my onesie, my Sesame Street onesie, it doesn't do it for me work-wise.
No.
Yeah, the local library. I used to take my kids to a lot of stuff in the local library.
Same.
So it's a place that I knew well then, but knowing it in a different way now is actually really nice.
Mm.
The place of just, oh, calm. It's calm. And all of life is there. I love that. All of life is there. It's open to anyone, everyone, any age, whatever their situation is. And I love that about local libraries. And I will fight for them. I will.
Yeah.
Because I know they're under great pressure, a lot of them.
Yeah. And that's so interesting what you say. Yeah, such a great place for relaxation, but also people watching. I mean, that's two of the best things you need.
Yes, actually, that's, and you overhear some really fascinating stuff in the local library. And they shouldn't be talking, I have to say, because there is a silence policy usually in the library. But no, you pick up some great little pieces.
Yeah, fantastic.
Mm.
We always like to finish on a worst piece of advice because, you know, as you said earlier, you can learn from your failures.
Oh,
so tell us the worst piece of advice you were given.
Okay, we're in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. Light Lunch, the show that Sue and I are doing, is actually going down quite well. It's quite popular amongst students and prisoners, which makes us a bit of a cult hit. I'm 30 years old and it's the first time in my life that I've ever earned any money. I'm single. Do you like the way I'm doing this in the present tense? I'm trying to make it more
dramatic. No, I love it. I love it. It's like I'm reading your book.
It's so lame. I'm single. I'm nudging 30. I've got a little bit of cash in the bank and I'm thinking, right, I'm going to go to a very, very well-known central London, very, very posh department store because I've never bought anything from a posh department store to wear. And I've seen it on AbFab. I've seen it, you know, in films. And I'm going to be that girl. I'm going to be Sarah Jessica Parker. But the London, obviously much, much lamer version. Mm. So I sweep in to this department store. I have no fashion sense, can I just say? I mean, I read Grazia and I love looking at all the pretty, beautiful pictures of all the amazing fashion. Don't really possess much of it myself. The white leggings anecdote will underscore that. So I'm in the department store and my eye is drawn immediately to a blazer.
Mm.
It's an orange blazer with a mustard stripe running down it.
Right.
And I don't know what possessed me, but I went up to the stall and the lady, and she is responsible for this. She gave me the worst piece of advice ever. She said, oh, put it on. Yeah, put it on. Oh, that looks absolutely brilliant. Oh, you've got to have that. That's amazing. Yeah. And I was so flattered by her. I bought it. It was about £300.
Oh, my God.
Which is awful. I mean, I would never, ever spend that amount of money on an article of clothing. Bought the blazer, wore it to a party. People were literally buckled up, just laughing. They were they still talk about it. Sue loves to talk about it. She talks about it twice a month, probably.
Where is it? Does she have it? You should have given it to her.
I gave it to a charity shop.
Oh, that's better, I suppose.
No, I was so ashamed. A, that I'd spent that amount of money on a jacket, and B, that it was that jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, it was disgusting. It was really bad. It was like a sort of, I imagine like when a cricket team go on their annual dinner, that the kind of the chief cricketer will wear a kind of comedy blazer.
Yeah.
It was like that.
Okay. There is a thing though, isn't there? Your first pay packet, when you just want to treat yourself. That is such a nice feeling.
Listen, if you don't have kids, if you don't have, you don't have much responsibility, you know, and you're right, and you get this money and you just think, oh my God, you know. Mm. I think I did go a little bit mad that summer. I bought some quite rogue objects.
I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
I've loved it. Thanks, Rhiannon.
So great to have Mel Gedroych on Grazia Life Advice. Her new novel is called The Best Things and it's out now. Definitely go check it out. Now, you've heard me ask many, many times before if you'd help us out by rating and reviewing the show. And you probably thought, I'll get round to that one day. Please make today that day. It really, really helps us out and helps new people find the show. They'll hear episodes from brilliant people like Mel Gedroych and recently Kate Thornton, Annie McManus, Edith Bowman, many, many more. See you next time.